Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. National Geographic takes the plunge in a weekly scripted series next Tuesday night with Genius. Albert Einstein is the subject of this first set of episodes, played by Johnny Flynn as young adult, Jeffrey Rush as mature innovator. Writer and co-executive producer Noah Pink joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. Meg Gill is one of the beer world's brightest newcomers, as founder of Golden Road Brewing in Los Angeles. Now, thanks to Viceland, she's on the cross-country trail of unique lager makers on Beerland. We'll check in with Gill later this hour. Also ahead, our classic trivia question of the week, and a request to TV writers and producers dealing next week in Los Angeles. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading supplier of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later this half hour. Happy to have you with us for this Friday afternoon edition of the program All About Television. Great that you're wrapping up the week with us. Hope you've had a very good one. We've got some wonderful guests coming your way in the hour ahead, and we invite you, as always, to be part of the conversation. It's very easy. You converse, and you do so using this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio. Another way you're involved is our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You can find that on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And as soon as you get in the room, we'll get to where you're on and what's going on your mind. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen. Follow instructions, and other people can be live with you. A couple of short news note quickies before we get to the rest of the program. Freeform has renewed Shadowrunners, one of its most popular programs, for a third season. That'll be happening next winter. And Fox and Charter are still working out a new agreement. Until then, Fox cable networks like FX, National Geographic, and others are still on Charter cable systems and Charter Spectrum systems in New York, Los Angeles, and elsewhere around the country. No word yet on whether a deal is going to be reached either later today or before the weekend, but they're still talking, and that is very, very important. Okay, we are awaiting Noah Pink, the writer and co-executive producer of Genius, which will premiere this Tuesday at 9 p.m. Pacific time on National Geographic. He should be joining us shortly. And before we do, let's get into our classic trivia question of the week, which nobody has gotten the answer for. We're still waiting for our third consecutive weekly winner in a row. So we're going to keep the question in play through today and the weekend. So if you're first with the correct answer before our next episode, Monday afternoon, you can win The Graves. It's the brand new novel coming out next month from Pam Wessler, one of the writer-producers on Bull, one of this year's new hit series on broadcast television. This is PBS, Tuesday night at 9 o'clock. Here's the question. On the TV series Bull, where does Bull work? Where does Bull work? And we need the exact name of the organization or the place where that character works. And if you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please be sure to enclose your name and where you are emailing from. And again, if you're first with the correct answer, you will win The Graves, the brand new novel by Pam Wessler, one of the writer-producers on Bull. And let's give the question one more time. On the TV series Bull, it's on Tuesday nights at 9 on CBS, where does Bull work? Where does Bull work? So we want the exact location, the exact name of the place that that character works. Of course, Bull is the series based on the early working life of Dr. Phil McGraw, who is one of the executive producers of the series, helped create it, and the series, by the way, is produced here in New Web, New York. We're 32 degrees, incidentally, at the top of the hour. Pretty cloudy day here in New York. We may get some showers before the day is out, but I understand Saturday is supposed to be dynamite. Sunday, maybe not, but it looks like Saturday will be terrific. So once again, on the TV series Bull, where does Bull work? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your full name, your full mailing address, your first with the correct answer before our next episode Monday afternoon. You will win The Graves, the new novel published next month by Pam Westler, the writer-producer on Bull. And if you just missed the question, no problem. I will post it tomorrow morning and on Sunday as well if we need to on my Facebook page, also on Twitter at this handle. It's at UBC Simon TWBT. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, be in, and all the very best. Again, we are waiting for Noah Pink, writer, co-executive producer of Genius. It's the first weekly scripted series from Nat Geographic and premieres this Tuesday night on that channel, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. It's a very, very special production. Brian Grazer and Ron Howard are among the executive producers, and Howard will make his first ever TV demonstration as a director. That's right, this is his debut as a TV director. I've seen clips of the show, which stars Jeffrey Rush as the elder Einstein, and Johnny Flynn is the young Einstein. Emily Watson also stars. Also some other great cast members too, such as Seth Gable, Vanessa Colling, Shannon Talbert as well. And it all kicks off this Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, on the National Geographic Service, available on cable and satellite all over the country. It will also be premiering in the coming week on National Geographic channels all over the globe. And if you haven't heard, Genius has already been renewed for a second season. The way this show works is that every year it will focus on a different icon of the world of science and history. And you will find out on the final episode who the second season subject will be. So Noah, if you hear us, or anybody from Nat Geo TV can hear, please have Noah get on the line at our number, 646-652-2906, and let us know what's going on. Or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name, to communicate with us, and we'll take it from there. And as soon as we see that Noah is ready to go on the air, we will get him on the air. And at the bottom of the hour, we'll be joined by Mae Gill. She is one of the leading entrepreneurs of the world of beer making in Los Angeles. She owns her own company called Golden Road Brewing. And coming up next Thursday night on Viceland, which, by the way, is a network that's only been on the air for over a year, but it's really making waves now. She's involved in a series called Beerland, where she goes around the country, starting to Santa Fe, New Mexico, and checks out not just the local beer scene, but the local culture that those beer wannabe makers proliferate. So we'll have Meg on live from Los Angeles at the bottom of the hour. I had a chance to talk to you earlier, and she's very excited about coming on. I think if you see Viceland, see the series, I think you will really enjoy checking out what Meg does all over the country. And incidentally, that series ends in a competition among the people that Meg finds and invites to the wonderful Tinseltown City for an opportunity to, have some beer, fame, and fortune. And I think it'll be interesting hearing the kind of beer, the kind of brew that Gil went for in her travels. So that's coming up at the bottom of the hour. So once again, we're still waiting. Noah Pink, writer, co-executive producer of Genius. And Noah, if you're hearing us, get on the phone, 646-652-2906, and we'll get you on the air ASAP. In the meantime, while we're waiting for Noah to get on, I was going to do this near the end of the show, but since we have the time, let's do it now. Let's do a comment. And actually, it's a comment in the shape of a request. But before I get to the request, I want to offer two disappointing thoughts. A lot of great things happened this week in the world of television, but there were, for me at least, two disappointments. One was American Crime, the brilliant series on ABC Science at 10, not getting the Peabody Award. It was up for the finalist. Did not get in. Some good shows did get in, like Atlanta and Better Things on FX, Thief on HBO, and a show that we highlighted in this program a couple months ago, National Treasure on Hulu. But American Crime did not get in. Very shocked at that outcome. But it was a slam dunk. Oh, well. So it's disappointing, but I'm hoping next year, given how American Crime is doing with Season 3, which is extraordinary, building on the first two seasons, I'd be shocked even more if the Peabody did not give it their major award. But again, congratulations to all the Peabody winners in the scripted category and the scripted role of a scripted nature that were announced yesterday. Peabody Awards are May 20th at Cipriani's Wall Street. Rasheeda Jones will be the MC. The program will be running on PBS and on Fusion in a simultaneous presentation on the same night or same day on your local PBS station or cable system or DBS system that carries Fusion. And also, Norman Lear will be getting an individual Peabody Award. We had him on this program last fall. It was one of the great highlights of this series, great highlights of my life as a journalist covering the world of TV for 30, something years, and I'm looking forward to seeing him face-to-face, and we hope to have him back on the program before the year is out. So that was one disappointment. The other disappointment involved the effort by TV writers of the Writers Guild of America and TV producers, as well as film producers, to get a new deal with each other. At the start of this week, they were supposed to meet for the first time in over a week in Los Angeles at a bargaining table and try to work out a deal. But just a few hours in, clock stopped, everyone left, no dealing ever since. What a waste. What a big, big waste. Tremendous time wasted. So guess what? The Writers Guild of America has a deal currently that expires on May 1st. If we go for a strike, and it looks very likely like that's what the Guild may want to do, you will not like, as a TV viewer, what could happen. Because we saw what happened a decade ago, their last strike, over 100 days out on the job, the broadcast and cable network seasons delayed that fall, and a lot of viewers decided not to take television anymore and started the major decline of broadcast networks to where we are now in terms of overall viewership. I think it would be devastating if they did go on strike again. So this Monday morning, coming Monday morning, we understand that the Guild and TV producers will go back to the bargaining table. So here's my request. Once you get into that room in Los Angeles, wherever it is, stay in that room. Don't dare leave. Block the door if you have to. Work around the clock. Let's try to get a deal. You know, one of the things I'm involved with in the world of away from television is Landmark. As some of you may know, Landmark being the Empowerment Education Program behind the Landmark Forum and other courses taught around the world. And one of the basic principles of Landmark is this. Anything can be handled in communication. But you have to communicate to make something happen. And that means, as I like to say, getting what you need to say, what you need to communicate, out of the brain, out of the mouth, out in the open, and that's when people can deal with it. So let's make the most of what could be this final opportunity to get a deal starting next Monday. So Writers Guild people, TV and film producer people, when you get in that room this coming Monday in L.A., stay in that room, work around the clock, communicate, and maybe, just maybe, we can pull off a miracle of having a deal done by this time next Friday. I know it is not going to be easy. I know that there's a whole different scene that the writers have to deal with, which is less episodes per series to work with, 10 to 13 compared to 20, 22, 26 of a season, and they're way more compensated for that lack of episodes. But let's try to get something done. Let's make the effort. It hasn't happened yet. Let's go for it this coming week. And let's see if maybe, just maybe, we can pull a miracle. And now joining us live from Los Angeles, the writer and co-executive producer of Genius, coming this Tuesday on NatuGraphic, is Noah Tink. Noah, great to have you with us.
Hi, how are you?
Very fine, thank you. There's a lot of excitement about your project. You adapted this from a wonderful book by Walter Isaacson, the journalist, former CNN leader. What's it been like to put this first series for Nat Geo together?
Well, it was, I guess at the beginning kind of a bit of a daunting process, not only because of the quality of Walter Isaacson's work, but also because of the man we were trying to, trying to dramatize and give a life to. And you know, everybody knows who Einstein is, but I guess, you know, for me, what initially attracted me to the project, especially after reading Isaacson's book, was that, you know, it was a story about, you know, it wasn't just a story about this mathematician, this quirky guy. It was really a story about, you know, a very flawed human being and also a great humanist and a pacifist and a politician, as well as a great mathematician. And he had so many, you know, so many different elements to his character. And I, you know, so it was definitely a daunting task, but also very fun because I learned a lot while, in the process of researching it.
Well, welcome guest 916 and Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, into our chat room. Simon Apple 04, my name. You'll find it on our homepage, blog.tokyo.com/televised. If you have a question or comment for our guest, put it in the room or give us a ring, 646-652-2906. Noah Tink is our guest live from L.A. He's the writer and co-executive producer of Genius, which premieres this Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on Nat Geographic. And, Noah, you had some very special help with getting the series off the ground. I'm talking about Brian Grazer and Ron Howard. And Ron, as I mentioned earlier before you came on, he is making his TV directing debut. It's a very special project for him. What was it like to have that level of talent working with you?
I mean, kind of every writer's dream in many ways. Working with Ron was a really, not only like an instructive experience, but it was really great to kind of, to get notes from him and to develop and to, and to see how, to see a script and a show and putting a drama together, from the eyes of a director. It's, sometimes when you're living in your own world as a writer, you forget, or you don't. It's not that you forget, but you don't see the script the same way the director would. And so working with the likes of Ron and the producing likes of Brian opened my eyes in many directions. But first and foremost, what it did is it got the show off the ground at lightning speed. Basically between the moment that I pitched him, he read the script and I pitched him the season. Within 2.5 weeks, we were back in the room pitching to Nat Geo, and we had a 10-episode order. So it was kind of every writer's dream in many ways. And I think what Ron and Brian really brought to this and their way into it, which I found really interesting, because I know from speaking with Ron, he'd been offered a few Einstein projects over the years, and he was a bit loath to read this, the pilot that I initially wrote, because he was afraid that it wouldn't work, because he'd read so many failed options, and when he was finally convinced to read it, what he found really surprising, and what Brian found really surprising was that it was really about, this is a man, and especially a young man who was under a lot of pressure. And that's how they found their way in. He had pressure from his family to be an engineer, not to be a physicist. There was obviously political pressure as he was growing up in Germany, and pressure from his professors. And he was a guy, Einstein was a guy who always like pushed back. And so, as creators, I think everyone, related to that, because as artists, we always try, to get things made and to have our voice heard. And sometimes you're up against people who are saying no. And Einstein, he approached the world through physics, but he had the exact same problems. I mean, every time he came up with a new theory, the establishment said no. And it was a guy who was resolute and he did not stop at anything. And so I think it's a good lesson, and I think it will be inspirational for everyone once they see the show.
Is that why this series spends considerable time not only showcasing Einstein, what we know and maybe don't know of him as the mature adult, the innovator in physics, but also what shaped Einstein as a younger person?
Yeah, I think, I think that speaking from my own experience, I think very few people know Einstein's story as a younger person. And I think, a lot of his experiences as a teenager and through his 20s were, really defined him as not only a human being, but also as a physicist. And so it was those moments which you see in the first episode of him, being left by himself to his own devices as his family moves away from Germany and he's stuck in Germany by himself and, having to face the strict tenor of Germanic education at the time and really, rebelling against it. And it kind of set, a path in motion for him to end up with this family in Switzerland called the Wintlers who really opened his mind to, not only to physics, but also to philosophy and to politics and to opening up. And it was really there that he was, he's really well known for attacking, the mysteries of the universe and looking at them not from a mathematical perspective but from a visual perspective, and really, he always had these very famous thought experiments, and that's how he came up with many of his groundbreaking theories. They came through visualizations, and it was through his alternative education in Switzerland after he ran away from Germany as a teenager that really kind of set in motion the man we all remember.
We're talking with Noah Pink. He is the writer and co-executive producer of Genius. It's the first weekly scripted series in the history of Natural Geographic, and it premieres this Tuesday night at 9:30 Pacific Time. Executive produced by Brian Grazer and Ron Howard Imagine Television, with Howard making his TV directing debut. Noah joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Applebaum with you live from the other coast, New York. 52 degrees at the top of the hour. Delighted to have you with us this Friday afternoon. If you have a question or comment, get it in. 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Monday on Tomorrow We Televise, we lead off with an exclusive interview with another key writer behind a key new series that's premiering this month. In this case, The Handmaid's Tale, based on the best-selling book by Margaret Atwood, now made into a series on Hulu that premieres next week, and we will have live with us Bruce Miller. Also, you'll meet a very fascinating woman by the name of Dani Davis. She is the co-founder and chief creative officer of Girl Starter. It's an organization trying to give young female entrepreneurs their first big break. And next Friday, TLC will be beginning a new series called Girl Starter, which will do exactly that. And Dani Davis will be with us. That's all next Monday, 3:10 Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We'll Be Televised. How did you find working with a cast like Emily Watson and Jeffrey Rush, particularly, who plays Einstein? Seeing the clips that I did this week, including the Nat Geo event here in New York at Jazzing the Center, what Jeffrey does is very striking in that role.
Yeah, I mean, listen, as a writer, you can't, you know, you really can't ask for more than, you know, to have, you know, the best of the best reading your lines and really bringing life to you know, every, you know, really bringing their own, you know, bringing their own charm and their own wit and their own style, but also, you know, doing, you know, really bringing your life, your words to life. It was, I mean, it was, you know, working with Jeffrey and Emily is, the funny thing is, like, they've played husband and wife three times now. So they definitely have a little bit of a shorthand with each other. And Emily likes to say that, you know, she was working another picture right up to almost to the beginning of production date for her. And so she found herself towards the end, like, you know, in a little bit of a panic because she didn't have much time to prepare. But she and Jeffrey really talked it through and you know, she decided that it would be really nice if they kind of saw each other as Tweedledee and Tweedledum. And I think, you know, as Emily plays his first cousin and second wife, Elsa Einstein, her and Jeffrey, you know, I mean, they just light up the screen. And Jeffrey himself is, I mean, what he brings to it is phenomenal. I mean, he takes your words and he makes them better. And he also adds his own, you know, lines and quips. I mean, he's a very funny gentleman and a supremely talented actor, as we all know. So, you couldn't ask for more.
Talk about the environment under which the series was made. I understand it was shot in Prague, which is a gorgeous city, if anybody has traveled
yes.
to that area. What was it like to have that environment shape what you did?
I mean, it was definitely essential for what we were doing. We were shooting, you know, the majority of young Einstein's story, you know, occurs between 1895 and 1933, when he finally leaves Germany, and so we're dealing with, you know, very you know, late 19th and early 20th century Europe. And the great thing about Prague is that, you know, it never got destroyed in the war. So you have these beautiful old buildings and beautiful architecture, which really can, you know, emulate any. European city from any time period, you know, after like the mid 19th century. So it's kind of a, you know, a set designer's dream. And Prague is a very, I mean, it's a fantastic city to shoot in. You know, it's very open. You know, you can film almost anywhere, which is fantastic. And the crews are so fast and so great. So it was, you know, overall a really great experience. I mean, you know, when it comes to shooting Princeton, like Prague for Princeton, it becomes a little more difficult. But I think we were able to pull it off.
How different is this project from anything else you've done in television?
Well, this is my first television project, so I have nothing to compare it to. But it's definitely, I mean, from what I've been told from all of my co-writers and from the showrunner, Ken Biller, and from the executives at NatGeo, I mean, I think, you know, first and foremost, I don't think many series happened this quickly. I mean, it was literally only a year ago that I was pitching this, and now a year later, suddenly we have a show going on the air. So it's it was greenlit in lightning speed, and we had a room together within a month. It was, you know, so I can only hope that my future television experiences will be as good as this one.
Before I ask about that, how did you get the role? What did you do beforehand, and how did you get the attention of Geo?
Well, I came from the feature world, and I wrote the script, which is being produced next year. As you know, as I'm sure you know, features, you know, sometimes take a lot longer than television projects to get off the ground. And it's about the mime Marcel Marceau, and a company called Audlot, which is run by Gigi Pritzker out in Los Angeles. They had read my feature script, and we had a meeting, and they owned the rights to Isaacson's biography. And they had initially tried to develop it as a feature script for over like 5 or 6 years, and it did not work out. And so they were looking to redevelop it. And so I read the book, and I came back at them, and I knew I'd be a long shot, but I basically just, you know, as a younger writer, just had to pitch them the entire season. So I pitched them all 10 episodes and got the job to write the pilot and wrote the pilot with Audlot. And then we took it to Imagine, and we're lucky enough that Imagine loved it and gave it to Ron, and Ron loved it. And then within 2 weeks, we had a show. So it was all in all, you know, from the moment I met Audlot, to the moment I met Imagine was about a year, and then another year, here we are. So it's a pretty quick process, but it's been a lot of work's gone on in that 2 years as well.
For those of you who don't know who Audlot is, they were a major player in the Academy Awards. They showed with a film called Hell or High Water with Jeff Bridges. It got a number of Oscar nominations, including Best Picture and Bridges' performance. It was a wonderful film, by the way. And congratulations to Audlot on that. And I guess this is the first TV work. When will this series premiere? Do you know what network it's going to go on?
Well, yeah, it's going to be on National Geographic, and it comes out April 25th, so this coming Tuesday, 9 p.m.
Very good, great. Right before Genius. Wow. So looking forward to seeing that as well. Before I let you go, we already know that Genius is coming back for a second season, and the whole idea of this series is that every year, in sort of an anthology-type style, it focuses on another scientific icon or a scientific legend. They're going to announce on the final episode who that will be, but I'm curious if you get the opportunity to do this series again, is there a particular, you know, scientific genius that you personally would like to adapt? Or track for the series.
I mean the answer is there is. I don't think I'm at liberty to to really discuss who they are, but I mean, you know, we're definitely open to it's a continuing conversation. But you know what we're lucky for is that there are quite a few very, very rich options. And for me, I would like, you know, down the line, if we get to do multiple seasons of this, and we get to explore not just physicists and scientists, but also, you know, geniuses in other realms, like perhaps artists or writers or musicians. So I think, you know, the term genius is a very, you know, it's probably an overused word, but when you get into, you know, discussing who, you know, what is the idea of genius and who is a genius, I mean, I think that list gets a lot shorter, but lucky for us, there definitely are a few who have very rich lives and have stories that are definitely worth telling. You know, Einstein's life is really the story of the 20th century in many ways. He was at the heart of two world wars. and the atomic bomb. So not only are we experiencing the life of this fascinating and brilliant man, but we're also experiencing 20th century Europe. And so hopefully with the other geniuses we cover, we'll be able to kind of, you know, shed light on a different time that, you know, in many ways will reflect the world we're living in today as well.
By the way, it's pretty appropriate that Ron Howard is making his TV directing debut with the first episode coming up Tuesday Night of Genius, because he, of course, got great fame from doing a little film called A Beautiful Mind, which was an Oscar winner in its year. Russell Crowe's great performance, and he directed that. I believe he won the Oscar for that film, and a great, great job it was. If you've never seen A Beautiful Mind, catch it next time it plays on Turner Classic Movies or somewhere, because it is a marvelous film. Genius, the premiere of the first weekly series in the history of National Geographic, premieres next Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Check your local listings where Nat Geo is available in the area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, go to www.natgeotv.com. That's www.natgeotv.com. And by the way, there'll be more scripted work on Nat Geo throughout the rest of this year, including this fall, the second season of Mars. Great miniseries that we covered last year. It's hybrid, scripted, and unscripted, and that'll be coming up, I believe, 6 episodes for season 2 this coming autumn. Noah Pink, thank you so much for coming on. Congratulations on your first move in scripted TV with Genius. Looking forward to seeing it fly this Tuesday night and beyond. And hope, and also good luck with the future World Series coming the hour before as well with you and Anwar and the gang there. It's great to have you with us, and all the very best to you.
Thank you so much. Take care.
You're welcome. You too. Take care. Noah Pink, writer, co-executive producer of Genius, Nat Geo, this coming Tuesday night. Joining us live from Los Angeles. When we come back, we're going to go back to L.A., and we're going to meet a beer entrepreneur who's now on the search for other brew around the country, thanks to Viceland and a series called Beerland, also premiering next week. Meg Gill joins me after we pause after the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com. More than 25 million listeners around the world every month, and growing. It's your home for the internet radio series about the world of film, The Projection Booth. Catch it Wednesdays, various times, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, that's VTR 24/7 available to you at YouTube.com. You can also check out our show and other Blog Talk Radio shows 24/7 at Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. If you don't have Apple TV, go to an Apple store near you or order it online. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised this Friday afternoon of April 2017. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. 50 degrees at the top of the hour. Delighted to have you aboard. Another great guest coming your way in the half hour ahead. And we invite you, of course, to be part of the program. All it takes, raise your voice, use this number, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04. My name, we welcome guest 916, 923, and our good friend from Philadelphia, Rick Webb. And our guest will come on after we pause for some fine words from the people at Audible.com. There's a wonderful book out now about the American spirit called The American Spirit. It's by the terrific historical writer David McCullough, and you can get it audio style with a trial run of Audible.com. Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment information. With over 108,000 titles to choose from, you can listen to them on any device, including wherever you are hearing this on right now at Blog Talk Radio. If you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, you can get one free audiobook like The American Spirit or one of your choice, a one-month trial, and great customer service because Audible is owned by Amazon.com. So check out what the world of sound can do for you, and how audible.com will transform the way you hear the world. audibletrial.com/televised. Check it out and enjoy. Viceland has been around now for over a year and has definitely been upending the world of television with a very interesting array of original programming. The latest series in that programming will be happening next Thursday night at 10 p.m. East Pacific Time, and it's called Beerland. It's part competition and part cultural look around our country, and it involves one of the fastest rising beer entrepreneurs in the country. Her name is Meg Gill. She runs a company out of Los Angeles called Golden Road Brewing, and she joins me now live from L.A. as host of Beerland. Meg, welcome.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for giving me an excuse to have a beer in front of me.
Absolutely. What kind of beer do you have in front of you?
I'm drinking our session IPA called Wolf Pup. It's a nice day drinker for sure.
So how do you get the opportunity to travel around the country and see what some of your contemporaries who want to get into your business are up to?
Yeah, you know, it's fun. I got into the business 10 years ago, right after I graduated college, and it was, you know, pretty small part of the market, and it was strange for me to be getting into beer, you know, at that time. I think it's still a little strange that I'm doing it as a young woman, but at that time, craft beer was not popular at all. You know, the fact that I wasn't going to Wall Street or law school or whatever was a little strange to my contemporaries. So, you know, it's fun that beer has gotten so popular that it warrants a TV show. It did, you know, it took some time to get this concept off the ground, but it turns out that the characters and the personalities behind these guys brewing beer at home, guys and gals brewing beer at home, is really terrific and, you know, worth telling. And in many of these communities, these home brewers who are brewing beer at home spend all this time perfecting their art, are really helping bring people together through beer and have, you know, an extended kind of family through their brewing. So it's been inspiring to be a part of that and fun and refreshing to kind of get out of the big stainless steel commercial operation that, you know, that I have now at Golden Road and get back to, you know, the art of brewing at home.
When you went on this journey for Viceland, did you expect, in addition to meeting these craft brewers, whether it's in New York or Santa Fe or in the Midwest, that you would also find just as much the culture under which these people operate?
You know, that was pretty surprising to me how passionate these guys are kind of devoting their lives to brewing beer, and the communities have, you know, supported them to do so, you know, because so much of my life is about the business of building Golden Road, and so I'm surrounded by, you know, beer professionals all the time who do that, but to kind of do it at home and do it on a scale that, you know, the whole family's supportive, the whole, you know, greater community is supportive of trying to get these brewers to continue to brew better beer and eventually, you know, potentially open their own business one day.
The first episode coming this Thursday night deals with Santa Fe, New Mexico, and I know that area fairly well because my late uncle, Uncle Harold Robbins, spent the last years of his life with his wife in Albuquerque, and we once went to Santa Fe to see some of the ruins in that area. But I have to say, in seeing the first episode at a screening here in Brooklyn, that people are going to be really surprised at the kind of culture and the kind of environment that these brewers operate in. And they're also going to be surprised at the fact that a lot of them are really experimenting with different ingredients that one from afar might think, this doesn't work in beer, like mango, like other fruit, like, you know, way beyond the standard hops and all the water and all the other ingredients.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to comment on the first part of it, the folks, beer is every man's drink. It's very much a blue-collar drink still. It's something that anyone should be able to drink and taste and learn about. And so oftentimes you're dealing with folks from all walks of life, but really, you know, we're focused on people who haven't made it yet in the beer business, who are doing it at home and have kind of a curiosity and an interesting story on the why they're brewing beer. So, you know, that's what we look for when we're casting these brewers. And in New Mexico in particular, you know, we found some of the old school cowboy New Mexican way of life, and, you know, Kale the cowboy is brewing beer because he does everything himself. You know, he's got a ranch, and he and his wife, you know, don't buy much. They pretty much do and make everything, you know, on their own, including a handmade saloon that they and their friends drink their beer at together. So, you know, that's the reason Kale's doing it. And then Andy, on the other hand, in New Mexico, moved to New Mexico for the opportunity to get into the beer business one day because it was a market that craft beer really hadn't hit yet, and he wanted to be a part of opening the market for craft. So, you know, and he's a younger guy, and he's kind of part of that new art scene in Santa Fe. So there's a story behind everybody who's homebrewing, and it's been fun to share and tell their stories with them and drink beers together while doing it. And the beers have been great. So that's that's key. Is we're not drinking kind of a muddled mess of what you would typically think of a homebrewed beer. They're very well made beers, and all of them could be good enough to be available commercially.
Plus, there's something at stake with this series, because at each stop, you pick one of these brewers to come back with you to Los Angeles for a taste-off. And what do they get if they win that taste-off?
Yeah, so we thought adding a competition element to this would kind of raise the stakes in each city. It's mainly a travel and culture show, but we wanted to have something that everybody who participated kind of got a shot to have something at stake with their beer that they're tasting me on. So we decided to brew the beer commercially at Golden Road for the winter. So they get to work on scaling the recipe to a commercial scale with our brewers, and then the beer is offered around the country, limited markets, but around the country, mainly in California. So they're the name of their beer and the cans will be distributed, on their behalf. So it's a pretty cool prize. It's a way for them to gain confidence in what they're doing, get some notoriety, and get their foot in the door into the beer industry.
We're speaking with Meg Gill. She is the entrepreneur behind Golden Road Brewing in Los Angeles. She is also, I can't really say a host, I would say more of an observer and really the participant, the main participant of Beerland. It's Viceland's newest original series, and it premieres next Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. And we've got Meg live from L.A. with us this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Delighted you're aboard this Friday afternoon. If a question or comment for Meg, don't be silent. Speak up and dial in 646-652-2906. That number works anywhere. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio. Or get into our chat room. Get your comment in there. It's SimonApple04 by name. Find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Next Monday on our program, our lead guest from Hulu's new series, The Handmaid's Tale, based on the best-selling book by Margaret Atwood. I've seen clips of this. This is going to be, I think, along with Genius, considered one of the best new shows of the season. We're only in mid-April. We've got writer and executive producer Bruce Miller in an internet radio exclusive. And then the co-founder and chief creative officer of Girl Starter, which will be the subject of a new series premiering next Friday on TLC, we've got Danny Davis. That's all Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We'll Be Televised. Like I said, Meg, you don't really come across, and I think one of the nice things about this series, from what I've seen, is you don't come across as a host. You really come across as like the every person who's observing what's going on, taking in the culture, taking in the atmosphere, and, of course, taking in the beer, brew by brew. And it's sort of fun to see how you react just as much as how the subjects react.
Yeah, I think that was one of the reasons I went to Vice with the idea to do this kind of a show, is that I knew that Vice and Viceland lens was something that I could be myself and authentic and more of a kind of a journalist almost, exploring these cultures and these people, than a show about me or about bigger craft beer or something like that. So it's been nice to not have the kind of hosty pressure of a mainstream network, and I've been blessed with great producers at Vice who've given me a lot of leeway in kind of style.
Mm-hmm. Along the way, whether it was in Santa Fe or New York or the next second episode or San Francisco or the other stuff, did you find any women who are also like you wanting to get involved as brewers?
Yeah, absolutely. Three female participants, and one was in New York, and then one in Colorado, and then one husband wife team in Hawaii. So the one in New York was kind of closest in age to me, and actually I've gotten some texts from some friends I went to college with that they knew her, folks who have have found out about the show. But you know, the Colorado lady is a mom who, you know, hasn't made the leap into commercial brewing yet, because she's got a steady job and family that she takes care of. So it's more risk for her. And then Hawaii, we met a great husband wife team. That the husband's in the military and brewing really brings them together. So all sorts of great folks and, you know, a good amount of women out there doing it. So it's been cool to see that for sure.
There are also a lot of women, incidentally, who produce your show. If you read the credits at the end, it's like up and down, a lot of diversity and a lot of female talent involved.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that me being a woman tends to attract, you know, other women like at Golden Road. Even, you know, we've got a lot of great female talent in management, and then, you know, I think that it's just it's out there. You just kind of gotta find it and know how to attract it.
What were you surprised about at the various stops? For example, did you expect, let's say, here in New York or in San Francisco, which has now become like and Silicon Valley close by, or Denver, or Honolulu, that the beer people you would meet would have a certain style of brewing, and you were caught off guard by exactly something way different?
Yeah, you know, I think in a lot of ways, every city, and the exciting part about going to every city is they're bringing a lot of local culture into their beer and a lot of local pride. So, you know, they want to showcase the best from that area, whether it's ingredients or, you know, vision behind what they're doing that's inspired by something in the region. But, you know, the most surprising brewer, I would say, is a fellow named Daly out of New York City. He's in Brooklyn. And, you know, he's got a big beard, hipster part of town, and he's a self-identified anarchist. So he started brewing because he didn't want to pay the government tax on beer. And he found a log in a park in Brooklyn and had a hunch that the log might have yeast, which is one of the three main ingredients in beer, that actually converts the malts to alcohol. Daly thought that this log in the park might have yeast on it. So he randomly started putting the log into his wort, which is just the sugar water at that point, and it converted, you know, the wort into alcohol, and the product became beer out of a log from a park in Brooklyn. And that in the brewing world, that just doesn't happen. I mean, back when, you know, the Germans weren't sure what yeast was before Louis Pasteur had identified yeast, the Germans thought, hey, you know, God put somehow, you know, I use this paddle, and then, you know, God makes the whatever the wort at that point converts it into alcohol, and, you know, we got this nice buzz, and it's clean to drink this beer. So Daly thought, hey, if these old brewers are using these paddles, there's yeast in the wood paddles, there are these wet, soggy paddles, you know, from 400 years ago, then maybe these logs in the park have yeast on them. And that's just a really crazy, you know, I've talked to a lot of brewmasters around the country and around the world, and that's something that nobody's done, you know, like grabbed a log out of a park in Brooklyn and made beer with it. So, you know, that is definitely the wildest that we've come across, and the beer actually tasted great, tasted really clean, and, you know, kind of proves you can do a lot with a little in the brewing world.
Mm-hmm. Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, is on the line. And, Rick, from what you just heard from Meg, is anyone in Philadelphia trying something similar to what that guy is doing in Brooklyn?
Actually, yeah. I mean, some people do, like, open yeast their beers, which is like a style that Belgium does. So there's a lot of people experimenting with beer in Philadelphia, including myself, Simon.
All right, there you go. You're on the line with Meg Gilkey. Go right ahead.
Yeah.
Hi, Meg. My question for you is, since you're a brewer, and a lot of brewers are like part chef, part scientist, they're sometimes not the easiest people to make interesting or get you know, their personality to open up. So I'm wondering yourself as a host, like, how you get people to open up, whether, like, you took some courses or training or whether it's natural, and, like, kind of what your advice to other people that do video blogs and YouTube shows, interviewing brewers and stuff like that. Like, how do you get people that aren't used to being on television to, like, open up and be interesting?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, I think that that was part of when you see the show, you'll see that I'm a pretty non-hosty host. And that's one of the reasons is that I needed to it needed to feel really natural. And I just kept kind of talking to the brewers and myself into the fact that pretend like the cameras aren't there, or know the guys who were operating the cameras. We would have two cameras in, you know, some of these interviews, and I got to know the guys behind the lens and kind of know what they're looking for and what they're thinking. And getting to be friends with the camera guys helped me kind of forget that the cameras guys were there. Like, hey, I'm talking to Mike. I'm talking to Dave. I'm not talking into a camera, you know? So that was one way that I was able to make it more personal is really getting to know those guys and getting the brewers comfortable with the crew that was in their homes. Usually for a day at a time, we would be in, you know, it's pretty disruptive to have a camera crew in somebody's either backyard or driveway or house. And so I think, you know, giving them little tips like, here, you know, get to know Dave, the camera guy, or pretend it's not there, you know, kind of depending on who we're talking to. And, you know, the other thing is that the beer definitely helps. You know, we are sampling beers on camera, and that tends to, you know, disarm people and allow, you know, the juices flow to a little more freely. But, you know, there is a lot of that, you know, we try to feel out in casting. We try to make sure that, you know, we're not going to get somebody who, once the cameras are turned on, doesn't want to speak about, you know, their passion. So I think the casting was part of it, and then just kind of trying to be more relaxed in the approach to the show helped these guys open up more.
Awesome. So the secret is get them a little have a couple beers first before you interview them. So thank you.
and get to know the camera guys.
Thanks, and best wishes with your show.
Awesome. Yeah, good luck in Philly.
And
what a great beer town. We need to get out there to do some beer land stuff.
Yes, you do. Hopefully when you're out here, hopefully I'll meet you. And I definitely want to check out Golden Road Brewery now. I just checked my Untappd, and it looks like I've never tried your brewery, any of your beers before. So I definitely want to try and search that out now as well.
Awesome. Yeah, we've got a little bit of beer in Philly, so I'm sure you'll find it around town. Thanks a lot for calling in.
Absolutely. I'll hunt it down. Thank you. And thanks, Simon. Have a great weekend.
You too, Rick. All the greatest. Rick Rowe from Philadelphia here on Tomorrow We Televised. And maybe besides Philly, is there a city you didn't get to this time around with Viceland that if they give you a second season, you'd like to go to, whether it's Philly, the Pacific Northwest, New Orleans, Texas, Miami, the Deep South, where you want to go?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the beauty of this 6 episodes is that we decided to pick a few cities that were super beer-centric, who had, you know, great reputations for craft beer and home brewing. But we also picked a few cities we thought were undiscovered that might, you know, be interesting to go in and poke around and see the kind of, you know, newer beer culture. So we'd like to do the same thing moving forward if, you know, if we get a season 2 and pick a few of the, you know, the Philadelphia, the Portlands, the big beer towns, but then also, you know, definitely we've got to do one in the South, for sure. I'm from Virginia, and we need to represent the South. People are doing some really cool stuff down there. New Orleans has been thrown around, so, you know, we'll see. But it'll definitely be a mix of some developed beer cities and some that are, you know, a little bit underdeveloped in craft.
The program is Beerland. It's the latest original series from Viceland. It's been around now for over a year. It's put together by Vice and A&E Networks. They co-own the service. And you can find Beerland next Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. Check your local listings for where Viceland is available in your area on cable and satellite. In many markets, it's on the channel position that used to be owned by H2. But check your local listings for sure. And for more details online about the program and the network, here's where you go, www.viceland.com. It's www.viceland.com. Of course, you can also check out Vice News Tonight every weeknight, Monday through Thursday at 7:30 on HBO. And don't forget Vice, the weekly news magazine, at 11 p.m. Friday night on HBO. All great viewing and worth your time. Meg, thank you so much for coming on. It was a pleasure to catch the first episode of your show. Good luck with the series. I have a hunch, Joe, you're going to have a great run in store. And all the best, of course, to you and everybody at Golden Road for continued success in the brewing field.
Thanks so much, Simon. Have a great weekend.
You too, Meg. All the greatest. And, of course, a great brew, too. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Meg Gill from Beerland on Viceland joining us live from Los Angeles. Thanks to both of our guests, Meg and Noah Pink from Genius on Naturopathic, for joining us today. All of you for listening. And don't forget, coming up on Monday, we'll have Bruce Miller. He is the writer and executive producer of The Handmaid's Tale, coming to Hulu next week. And Danny Davis, the co-founder and chief creative officer of Girl Starter, which next Friday night at 7 begins a series of its own on TLC. Don't forget, you can check me in the New York area Monday on BK Live. It's the daily show all about Brooklyn Beyond on Brick TV, which Brick TV, by the way, segments post on YouTube. And also check out my Tomorrow Tell Life columns at MediaVillage.com. We've got a new one on Crackles up front here in New York earlier this week. That's MediaVillage.com. Great site for media analysis and commentary. Remember, if you came in late on today's show, want to catch up an episode you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast version this weekend if you like on iTunes and Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. If you can, download your smartphone, tablet, take us on the go, share with others, feel all that love. We really appreciate it. And remember, you can find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, UBC Simon TWBT, and we'd love to hear from you. So if you have a comment about the program, please email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's also how you get involved in our class trivia question of the week. And also in our regular feature, we call it Show to Know. Is there a TV series you like that doesn't get enough attention? Well, let me know. We'll give it the attention and give you the credit as well. It's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. And again, find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. Why? Because we want to hear from you. Because what you say matters. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not as those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Candace Williams. Andy Toth is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Soderberg, executive content producer. The co-founders of this very enterprise are Al Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow We Televise is brought to you today by Audible.com, an Amazon company. Don't forget, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. www.audibletrial.com/televised. Give them a trial today. But tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a wonderful rest of your week and a great weekend ahead. And we'll catch you back here Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, of course you know where, Blog Talk Radio. Please be safe and be right out there this weekend. And until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.